Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsum a day for the 27th of Sivan. Today's responsum is from Tzitz Eliezer, part 5, Chelek Hei, Siman Bet, the second tshuva in the book, and it's about Kol Isha. It's about hearing the singing voice of a woman in person when she's in front of you, when she's not in front of you, over the radio. It's from the 27th of Sivan of Tufshin Tetvav, which is 1956. And it's written to Rav Avadya Yosef, because apparently Rav Avadya Yosef had just recently published the first volume of his Yabia Omer, his massive book of Tshuvot. And so it just denotes the timing. And 1956, the Tzitz Eliezer is turning 40. They've already turned 40. And Rav Avadya Yosef is 4 years younger than him. So they're young, up-and-coming, clearly Gedolim already, clearly great Torah scholars. But they're up-and-coming in the world. And Rav Avadya Yosef has just put out the first volume of his book. And Tzitz Eliezer had already put out a couple of volumes of Tzitz Eliezer. And as part of his sort of congratulations to Rav Avadya Yosef, he had promised him, or he had committed, that he would write him something. And he was writing back to fulfill that commitment. He's going to write about Kol Isha, where Rav Avadya Yosef in Siman Vav there had suggested that when you're not in the presence of the woman, if somebody hears the voice not in the presence of the woman, that could make it more mutar, that could make it more permissible to do so. So now he's going to answer. He says in brief, although it's not that brief, and he says, because Rav Yosef has already dealt with it at great length, it would be cute mafliya with his great broad breath of knowledge, as everybody has noticed about Rav Yosef. But it's interesting to watch what Tzitz Eliezer agreed to that, because he himself was no slouch in that area, especially in his knowledge of the books of response among the later scholars. So here, Rav Yosef suggests that there might be room to say that at least Rabbeinu Chananel, which is quoted in Nagor Mamoniot in Hilchos Kriyat Shema, and it's worth remembering, it will come up later, that much of the discussion about Kol Isha, about whether or not one can hear the voice of a woman, isn't necessarily stated about in general. It's stated more about Hilchot Kriyat Shema, about whether one can say Kriyat Shema when such a voice is present. There's both elements to the issue, and we'll separate some of that later on in this tshuva. But something worth remembering, that much of the discussion about Kol Isha, about whether or not a man is allowed to be hearing the voice of a woman, has to do with Kriyat Shema. It also has to do, as we'll see, not only necessarily with her singing voice, but maybe with her spoken voice as well. So we'll see about that. But Rav Avadya Yosef, when he was trying to understand or talking about the Rabbeinu Chananel, had suggested that that bekol v'kol af al gav de'ein nir ela einayim, meaning that he doesn't see the woman, he hears her voice, and he doesn't know her. Right, that would be room to say where Rabbeinu Chananel had spoken about this issue. I think as Rabbeinu Chananel said, it was okay. That maybe when he doesn't see the woman involved, he just hears a woman singing, he doesn't know who the woman is, that might be all right. And Tzitz Eliezer is very surprised that one could think such a thing, because how could it be, he says, that if you look at the Rabbeinu Chananel, he's talking about not the particular practical question of whether in a particular instance one could say Kriyat Shema, even though there's a voice around. He was talking more about the general principle of Kol Isha, that a woman's voice can have an element of being prohibited, that a man has to worry about it and treat it like he treats other things that are considered an erva, I mean, other things that can be considered arousing and therefore problematic for Kriyat Shema, for other issues. That's what the discussion was about, because in other situations, let's say part of her body is uncovered that isn't normally uncovered, or her hair, right? Those are things that are attached to her body, and the man, if it's going to be a problem for him, will be seeing it straight up. And that was what Rabbeinu Chananel was discussing. He was saying that just that voice is an inherently different kind of erva, because it's not in that sense connected to her. He wasn't saying whether or not the woman has to be present. It's that even if the woman's present, the voice isn't attached to her in the same way that her hair or parts of her body are attached to her. And he says, and the Rav Yoh discussed that issue as well. And the Rav Yoh had suggested that a woman's voice is somewhat like, not in the sense that it's going to sound like, but he's trying to talk about when you have things that are problematic for tefillah, for prayer, or for saying Kriyat Shema, and they're not directly there. So therefore, the example would be, let's say there's something that is a piece of manure, fertilizer, so that also, not for the same reasons at all, but that also are materials that one is not supposed to say Kriyat Shema or Daven when they're around. There it's pride, because the sight and the and the smell of it are considered so disgusting that they will interfere with the proper attention being paid to the prayer. So there, Rav Yossi says, but let's say it's in an ashashit. Let's say it's covered over, even in glass. So that's a whole discussion of its own, which I don't think we've seen, but it comes up in Shuvot as well in other contexts, that the glass getting in the way is seen as enough in that case. In the case of Tso'ah, in the case of manure, is seen as enough to allow one to read it. That would be suggesting, for those who hold that way, that would suggest that the problem in the Tso'ah, in the manure, isn't the seeing it, even though that might be disgusting to people. The problem is the smelling of it. So if it's covered over, you won't get the smell, even though you can still see it, and therefore that's okay. So the Rav Yah says, here, the voice, galui, the voice is open, so it's not like it's covered, meaning in the case of the Tso'ah of the manure, it was covered, but here it's the other way around. You can hear the voice, but you can't see anything about it. So he says, therefore, he thinks it's more like if the Tso'ah is uncovered, but the person is blind. So the person, so there, the person can't see it, but they can smell it, and that's why he thinks the kol is like that as well. So therefore, he suggests that even though you don't see anything, it's more appropriate to be machmir. The question isn't whether the Rav Yoh agreed with the Rabbi Yochanan, he doesn't. Point is, for the Tzitzit Eliezer, is that it shows that the discussion wasn't about the particular issue of whether or not one could or couldn't. The discussion was about the whole nature of the Isra of the prohibition. Tzitzit Eliezer then continues with other achronim, including with other commentators, including the Hagot Maimonides, who talks about the fact that really the problem with kol is the hirhur that extends from it. So hirhur being that the improper thoughts that the man can have based on the fact that this voice of this woman is very attractive. But then he writes that only makes sense when the voice is connected to a body. So that from hearing her sing and being attracted to her singing voice, he will then look at her and be interested in her and think about her. And therefore he held, which is not the original discussion, but he held that it's only going to be us, it's only going to be prohibited when she's there. But Tzitzit Eliezer adds, but the implication, though, is that if she's not there, then it's okay, but if she's there, it doesn't matter whether he knows her or not, because regardless of whether he knows her, if she's there and he can see her, his thoughts can then proceed from, it's a beautiful voice, to other kinds of thoughts in that way, and therefore he says that would be the more sensible way to have the chiluk, meaning Rav Ovadia Yosef seemed to think that if somebody hears a voice and she's not there and they don't know her, that's okay. And so they're saying, well, at least going to Hagot Maimonides, it would seem to be that as long as she's not there, it should be okay. And the knowing her or not knowing her is not the crucial factor. And then he skips. He says, I'm going to skip to Odalit in that discussion, meaning I'm going to skip a few paragraphs in that discussion, where the Rav Ovadia Yosef had brought a Maharam Shik. And Maharam Shik had seemed to say that kol be'isha, that the problem of the voice of a woman being an issue of erva, that a man needs to avoid it, he had said, the Maharam Shik said, it's only when he sees her or he knows her well, right? And he recognized her well, and his source was, or his comparison was, there's a Gemara in Megillah that says, talks about beautiful women from Tanakh, and so they say, what was the source of their beauty and what was the element of their beauty? So Rachav, the Gemara says, Bishma. It was her name alone that could do it. Meaning somebody would say their name and they would get excited and aroused. And Yael was her voice. So he says, but in the Gemara there it says, it's only if somebody knows her and recognizes her, meaning they know her well, and therefore it can create those reactions. Because if you know somebody and then you think about them and you focus on them, that's where it can create this reaction. So two, the Gemara has a discussion elsewhere where it says one cannot look at a woman's clothing even if she's not wearing them. And the Gemara there it says too, that's if you know her, and therefore you can, the man's imagination can extrapolate from A to B. But if you don't see her, the Maharam Shik seems to say, you don't know her, then it would seem like there's no problem at all. That's what the Maharam Shik has. So then the Tzitzit Eliezer says, I went back to look at the Maharam Shik, and I don't think that that's what he meant to write. I don't think that was his implication. It's not that if a man doesn't see her and doesn't know her, that then it's perfectly fine, because in his tshuva over there, he was talking about a subset of kol be'isha, of the voice of a woman, that was talking to her, lishol bishloma, asking her how she's doing, olishloach lashalom, or sending her regards. And it was talking about the Rashba in Bracha, because when the Gemara says kol be'isha erva, the voice of a woman is an erva, there's many opinions of the Rishonim who held, there were many authorities who held, that didn't mean a singing voice, like we commonly today assume it, it meant even her speaking voice. So if it's her speaking voice, that's a whole different discussion. And included in speaking voice is especially having courteous chit-chat in terms of how you're doing, sending regards through somebody else, and that was all seen as perhaps even more problematic than regular speaking, because de'ikachiba, because that is the kind of thing that can create good feelings, and from good feelings, things can proceed. So that's only there. Since they're just saying, did the Maharam Shik mean to say that if you don't really know her, if she's not in front of you and you don't know her, you can do these kinds of things, but the others would be problematic. But in terms of singing voice, it would be more significant than that. And then he knows of Pnei Yehoshua, who had said that when it comes to women that one knows who are an actual erva to a person, so there he thinks maybe the halakha was more stringent because we were worried that from entering into ordinary polite conversation, that would proceed into other things. But if it's a person with whom one has no general contact, so, you know, you go into a store to buy something and there's a woman there and you say, how are you doing today? So that could be a whole different question. There, maybe you'd see her, so that would be a whole different problem. But that might be a whole different set of issues in terms of it's not that you don't have to be as worried that one thing would lead to the next. And therefore, the Maharam Shik had said that when he says, now, when he's copying it that down, when he says that the question of being seeing her or knowing her is in those situations, that's what he was talking about. If so, then Tzitzileza says, and that would seem to say that this is only limited to these narrow questions of asking how she's doing, sending shalom, right, sending regards, and things like that, where the worry is that one thing will lead to another. As opposed to, and then there it might be that it's only when you're talking in person or you know her well. I should stop here and point out that the categories of all these things are not necessarily the same in our times, especially in terms of speaking, because in a world where people speak to each other more commonly, there's a whole question about how these arayos work or don't work. Not our topic today. Our topic today is really only the Tzitzileza's discussion of these issues. And his point is that when we see people making this chiluk, this distinction, that if she's not there or one doesn't know her, that would make it more permissible. He is suggesting that all those discussions were only in the cases of sending regards or asking how somebody is doing, but not in the case of a singing voice. We'll get to a singing voice in a second, but his basic point would be that a singing voice might be attractive and arousing even if the man doesn't know the woman, and then the question will be whether she has to be there or not be there, or something like that. But that's going to be the question. So in terms of conversation, the worry is the conversation can feed on itself, and that's a thing to think about. Now, many of these issues, and I pause to say this is me talking to Tzitzileza, and I don't have much to say, but many of these issues, people who aren't in that same kind of cultural construct in which those kinds of distinctions or separations between men and women are observed in the same way, will maybe tend to say, well, we just don't pay attention to these things. But some of these concepts and some of these ideas have applications even if we don't apply them in the exact same way. So the question of what does or doesn't lead to inappropriate connections between men and women, that's a question of its own. So even if we were, for example, to say the common practice is to apply Kol Be'isha Erva, that Gemara, in terms of the voice of a woman and what can or can't or shouldn't be listened to only to singing voices, as I think we very often commonly today do, that would mean, therefore, that speaking voices don't come into factors of Kol Be'isha. It would still be a reminder from these Rishonim and from these Achronim, from these opinions, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be aware of the fact that some kinds of conversations can lead to some kinds of continued relationships and developing of connections between men and women. If those connections are inappropriate, then those conversations shouldn't be had to begin with. And that's one of the things to remember from this discussion. So all of that applies to those isurim, to those aspects of interaction between men and women where we worry that one thing will lead to another. That would be talking to her, sending regards. That would be perhaps where the question of knowing Yael, of somebody who knows Yael and hears her voice would be an issue, because it's that we think that the knowing of her will lead to further things. But Zizeleza says when it comes to a woman's singing voice, that could be what he calls an isur atzmi. That could be in and of itself a problematic thing, an arousing kind of a thing, and therefore would be not a function of I know the woman, it's going to lead me to think about that woman, or I see the woman, it's going to lead me to think about her beauty. But it could be that we could hold that singing voices are themselves arousing, even if I don't know who it is whatsoever. Meaning the example would be, theoretically, let's say somebody heard a song and the radio, we'll get to in a second, and that might be more of a kula, but if somebody heard a song on the radio and the point of the song is to try to be attractive and try to be alluring, then even if somebody doesn't know who the singer is at all, it could be that the song will have that effect, and that would be something to think about and to consider. So that is what Tzitzileza is raising as a possibility. The the issues of not knowing the woman or not seeing her face, right, not being in her presence when she's singing, those would make sense if the problem or the prohibition of Kol Isha is a function of that we're worried that one thing will lead to another. But if it's true that singing voices of women are themselves inherently considered an erva, as for example, certain body parts of women could be imagined that way as well, then it could be that just hearing it, disconnected from knowledge of who it was who's singing it, and disconnected from seeing the actual woman singing it, could itself be a problem. And there are sources that suggest that. He quotes a Shut Pri HaSadeh, who says that the call, that the voice itself, is what arouses a man, and therefore that's the problem on its own. And the Chalkos Yaakov had said a very similar thing. And for them, they said, therefore, that hearing it on the radio or a record player would also be a problem, because it's not the connection to the woman that's the issue, and therefore, even though this isn't actually quite her voice, right? There, we've seen. I'm pretty sure I have recorded, but I know I've seen in preparation for future responsa that there are discussions that say that once something is recorded and it goes through a microphone, through a radio, it's not quite the same voice. And the Ezra actually will be the one who will say that in the tshuva that we'll get to in a few weeks. So here it's not the exact same voice, but the point is that the Isser isn't that it's her voice, it's that the Isser is, the prohibition is, according to these authorities, that the voice itself is so pleasant, it will arouse a certain feelings in a man that are inappropriate. And therefore, and that's what the Gemara in Brachos actually says, it says, Shmuel says, that Kol Be'isha is Erva, it's considered like looking at a body part of the woman that will arouse a man. Shenemar ki kolech arei. So there are certain voices, they're just so pleasant, they can create this reaction in the man, regardless of him knowing her or not knowing her, and therefore they would have that problem with it. The Rav Yos sounded like that as well, because the Rav Yos said, HaKol Hu HaErva, that the voice is in fact the uncovered part of the body, the nakedness of the woman, and so forth. In all these situations, it would make sense that the Maharam Shik would say, even when she's not around, even when he doesn't know her, because that's not relevant to the prohibition, to the problem that we have here. So that to the Ezra can imagine, you can find authorities who will say that it's okay to hear the voice of a woman even when she's not there, and you don't know her, but they might be only talking about the spoken voice of She'elat Shalom, of speaking with her and asking how she's doing and things like that, but not about the singing voice. The singing voice might be a completely separate thing. So there might be two levels of Kol Isha. There's Kol Isha that one thing will lead to another, and the Kol Isha that it itself can be the problem. There were, of course, others who held the other way, who, especially based on the Ravya and other authorities, that know that they saw Kol Zemer, they saw singing voices, as similar to the spoken voice, in the sense that if he doesn't know the woman and she's not present, that would be okay, and that would allow recorded voices such as record players or on the radio. And then he throws in that Rav Avadya Yosef had quoted Beit Sha'arim, who's saying that it's okay. And then Sisley says, I don't have that Sefer right now, but I did see the Sefer Vayitzbar Yosef, and in the book Vayitzbar Yosef, he quotes the Beit Sha'arim. When he quotes the Beit Sha'arim, he throws in that even though it's not prohibited halachically, mikol makom mechoar hadavar ubal nefesh yizahar mizeh, nonetheless, it is not appropriate. Mechoar hadavar means sort of ugly, it's pasnished, my mother would say. It's not right. It's not appropriate for a person, and therefore somebody who cares about their religiosity would avoid it. So that even if we think that there's a technical halachic issue of Kol Be'isha Erva requires the presence of the woman or knowing the woman, nonetheless, the idea of just listening to women singing, even on the radio, even on a record player, on an iPod, especially if it's the kind of voice that's going to create these reactions of the person, so whether or not it's permissible, it might be inappropriate. And that discussion, that distinction between voices that will create certain reactions in the man and won't, that Rav Avadya Yosef had discussed in a sefer quoted from a sefer Yiri Ota Oel. And sefer Yiri Ota Oel, it said that where she's not in front of him and he doesn't know her, because in both those cases it's more of a problem because we're worried that hearing her voice will lead him to think about her, and thinking about her will lead to other thoughts, and that's a whole different halach, a whole different path of how this Isser could work. So if we're talking about a person he doesn't actually know, he doesn't know her well, meaning he doesn't have any personal interactions with her, and she's not there, it's a first on the radio, then ben kol na'im ve'are leben kol she'ein hana'am imenu. So the Yiriyot Ha'Ohel suggested that there could be a difference between a voice that is beautiful and a voice that's not beautiful. Because if a voice isn't beautiful, then maybe it won't have these reactions. And maybe those voices, one is allowed to listen to on the radio, it's not a problem. So it's in the Stei Chemed, quoted that same exact idea in the name of a sefer called Divrei Chafetz, that if it's not a song that's calculated to produce arousal, and we know that we've seen those kinds of songs, and when he's hearing it, he's not having any intention of listening to her as a singer and appreciating her voice and enjoying it in those ways, and especially if it, let's say, it's songs about singing to Hashem for things that Hashem has done, for a miracle, or whatever, or she's singing, oh, she'po'ala hardim ayelet, she's putting a baby to sleep, or she's upset about somebody who passed away, she's thinking about that, so in those situations, this sefer also felt that you wouldn't have to worry about the kol isha problems because they're not alive in that situation. In that latter source, though, he doesn't seem to distinguish between whether she's present or not, and he doesn't even distinguish with whether he knows her or not, because he seems to think, this is the Divrei Chafetz, he seems to think that there are even songs that are not calculated towards producing any kind of reaction, those songs wouldn't be a problem of kol isha. So that's such as hearing a woman singing a lullaby to a baby, he seems to think that it would be okay, then that might be okay even when he knows her, and even maybe when she's around, right? Because that would not be a problem, according to the Divrei Chafetz, that would not be a problem, even though, again, the Divrei Chafetz wasn't supposed to be a machmir, but the question would be, for example, let's say a man's davening Maariv, and he's just gotten up to Kriyat Shema of Maariv, and then the baby needs to be put to bed, and his wife starts singing the baby to sleep. So the Divrei Chafetz would say, we have the right here in this situation to, he has the right situation to say, this is not the kind of song that's meant to arouse in anything, and therefore, he's just going to be able to continue saying Kriyat Shema. Then he points out that, as I noted before, there is a machloka rishon about this question. The Rif and the Rambam and the Tur don't talk about this in terms of being an issue for Kriyat Shema. They just talk about it in general, and the Rush explained that when the Gemara says that you can't hear it, and it didn't mean it in general, he meant it in general, not in terms of Kriyat Shema, and then the question is, how do we paskin it? And the Shulchan Aruch doesn't, in fact, talk about it in terms of Kriyat Shema as a prohibition. He says it's just Yesh Li Zahir. It's better to be careful about this, to avoid it, and therefore that it's the people infer from that it's not good, but there's not an actual prohibition, just that the Shulchan Aruch, sorry, not the Shulchan Aruch, but that the Yiriyot Ha'Ohel wanted to differentiate between a kol na'im and a kol not na'im, a pleasant voice and a not pleasant voice, and that there's no kin to in the Beis Yosef, and rather, it seems like kol singing is singing, and there you have it. So you have that debate among the Archonim as to whether we have this issur of kol isha. First off, is the scope of the issur. Is it a full prohibition in terms of Kriyat Shema, and when it's really not allowed to say Kriyat Shema when such a kol is such a voice is present? Then you have to figure out, do we mean a speaking voice or a singing voice? And it seems like a speaking voice of someone who one knows and or who's right there might be a problem, and a singing voice, there are those who hold it's a problem whether or not she's there because the voice itself is a problem. And then there are those who will say, but even within that, there's a question of whether the voice is aimed at producing arousal or the voice is just a stam singing voice. So, for example, a lullaby voice. There would be those also who would distinguish between good voices and not good voices, because if it's not a good voice and it's not enjoyable, there's no worry. So that's all. There are shittus in the Achronim. There are opinions in the Achronim. They take each of those positions, and Tzitz Eliezer is not weighing in on them. He's pointing them out. However, there's another discussion because of the way the Darkei Moshe, which is the same, is also where Moshe Issel is, the same person who wrote the Ramah, who wrote the glosses on the Shulchan Aruch, talking about Ashkenazic custom, had previously written glosses on the same Rav Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, had written the Beit Yosef, and the Rav Moshe Issel had written glosses on that. It's actually a whole tragic story of its own, how basically Rav Yosef Karo and Rav Moshe Issel were writing on the same books hundreds of miles apart from each other, and Rav Yosef Karo regularly beat him to it, and then Rav Moshe Issel would stop writing his own book and just instead write glosses on, and they became linked in Jewish history in that way. Okay, so the Darkei Moshe in the Tur, as opposed to, he writes it slightly differently in the Shulchan Aruch, but he seems to write that Kol HaRagilbo ain't no Erva, that if it's a voice that he's used to, then it's not an Erva. So that takes it the other way, meaning we've been saying till now, if you know the woman and you're comfortable with her, that could be more of a problem. He's suggesting it might be less of a problem, meaning if a man's davening Maariv in his house, forget a lullaby, but his wife walks in the room and starts talking to him or to somebody else, the Ramah seems to suggest that that's less of a problem because he's so used to it, we don't have to worry that it will arouse anything that he shouldn't be thinking during Maariv. On the other hand, if it's a woman, he's not generally, you know, he doesn't generally know, that would be more of a problem. That would seem to be almost the reverse of the Yirota Ohel, because the Yirota Ohel would seem to think that the more he knows her and the better the voice, the more of a problem it is. However, right, so that's the way the Rama seems to end up thinking, that one, that knowing well can be a reason to think the voice has less of an impact on him, and therefore he has less of a problem if he wants to continue saying Kriyat Shema in the presence of such a voice. Then there's the question, so until now we've pointed out the different options of different authorities about how the voice can or cannot affect us, then there's the question, and which kinds of voices it is. And then he points out that there's also the question of practically how we can handle certain things at certain times, because he points out that in the Mordechai and Brachot, they quote Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz the Yireim, who says, this is back in the 12th century, we live among non-Jews. We can't keep halacha the right way fully. Is that there are times when we have to violate the Torah in order to help better foster observance, and where you apply that or not is a whole discussion of its own. But his point was that we don't, in his time, stop learning when we hear women singing, because if there are non-Jewish women singing out in the streets and we can't do anything about it, we'll never be able to have a chance to learn, because apparently they were in a very musical society and women were just singing. The Aruch HaShulchan had written something like that, along with Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachos, that even when a woman is singing, if the man finds a way that he can focus on his tefillah, on his davening, or on his Kriyat Shema, then... And if he's so able to focus and concentrate that he won't really hear her, he'd be able to block her out, then it's okay, and then he can just continue reading. So it would seem to be, A, the pressure of circumstance can be a factor to allow him to continue it, and his ability to focus elsewhere can also be a factor. And various authorities, including the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, had written that when there's a problem and you hear women singing and you can't stop them, so that can't be a reason to not say Kriyat Shema or Daven or learn, but the person just try hard and to ignore it. So that's another option that one has, not option, but if one is forced into that circumstance, then one has to do it. Now he says it as just women, which sounds like even if it's Jewish women, and the Chaye Adam had written something along the same lines, and then Tzvi Ezra says, even though he's gone on for a while already, he says, and this is something that can be discussed at much greater length. Which is a reminder that in lots and lots of these discussions, you know, I find tshuvot that are short enough that I can present within my self-allotted half an hour, and I cut out things that are not quite fully necessary for the discussion, and the achronim, the people whose tshuvot we are reading and studying, are aware of many, many other sources that could have expanded the conversation and could have enriched the conversation. So we are slicing out and doling out that which we're able to handle, but we shouldn't think that we are getting the entirety of these conversations. And he points out that Chazal Onish had also written in a parallel kind of issue that perhaps the same idea is why it's okay to speak in public, let's say to give a talk of whatever sort of Torah talk, and there are women there whose hair isn't covered. So the Chazal Onish had said that might also be an Eit Lasot Lashem issue. It might be an issue of sometimes we have to do something that's not perfectly right in order to help uphold the Torah more. And since people need to hear words of tokacha, they need to hear the words of remonstration that these kinds of rabbis are going to give, if there are going to be women there, Chazal Onish is certainly assuming that women are required to cover the hair. That's an our tshuva today, so I'm not weighing in on that question, when and how much in any of those issues. I think we've seen that before in the Chazal Sofer, but right now, his point only is that in these kinds of arayot, we're talking about kol, we're talking about a woman's voice, here's about a woman's hair, the force of circumstance might allow us to ignore it in certain situations if there's a higher necessity, such as teaching Torah to people and letting people remember what areas of their lives need improvement. And part of this whole discussion, he says, is that it's important to find ways to find leniencies here, especially since there are people who care about these issues and yet can't find a place to live other than because there's a housing shortage. He writes about this. There's a housing shortage, and therefore they can't live other than in places where there are women around who are just all day singing and hanging around and making music, and therefore there's no way to avoid it, and therefore, and you don't want these people who really care about halacha and care about keeping the Torah properly, and you don't want them to necessarily feel bad all the time, so this is a way to show them that there is room to suggest that they have the right to do what they're doing in terms of saying Kriyat Shema, in terms of davening, even if they're forced to be in the presence, in some sense, of a woman's voice. That's especially true, that Tzvi Ezra says, if it's talking about a radio, because in a radio, she's not in front of him, and mostly, he doesn't really know her, And therefore, in those situations, there's even more room to say that it's allowed and to have a leniency. He says also in the radio, as we're going to see, he says the radio is not the actual voice. Why? Because in a radio, the voice has been translated into the electricity on the wires and then retranslated into her voice, and that change might be halakhically at least contributing to saying that it's okay. And that's why, which is the other tshuva that we're going to see soon, that's why the Zohar holds that you can't hear shofar, you can't hear Megillah through a radio, through a microphone, through all those kinds of things, because you're not hearing the original voice, and that's going to be helpful here as well. So if somebody's, it's only a radio and they can't avoid it, that's going to be better, as long as he throws in. He reminds us that Vulvachali Kavain Lihitlea note, as long as the person is not intending to get any pleasure out of it, because if you tend to get pleasure out of it, so then, right, that's removing from ourselves the way that the others are writing it. Removing from ourselves the sense of holiness and sanctity, and it's very terrible, and it's an obligation on every Jewish man to try to work hard always to purify himself. And purify himself means that our thoughts should be appropriate, and our thoughts should be things that we're allowed to do, and certainly during the time of davening and Kriyat Shema and those kinds of things, we shouldn't even think about other kinds of things as well. So that's all underlying this Gemara and Brachos about the things that are considered erva, things that are considered inappropriate to see and to deal with, among them which is a kol. The definition of that is what we've been discussing today, and the Tzitzit Ezer in his conversation with the Avad Yosef about his Sefer, which getting to these issues of, is it a singing voice, a nice singing voice, even a speaking voice, only people we know, only people we don't know, only in direct contact or even through radio, and those are the issues that we saw today in our response of a day for the 27th of Sivan, the Tzitzit Ezer, on the question of Kol Isha. Have a great day.